All right, welcome back. Who's talking? Hobo Frank, Vern Inge in the house, and UVA has a couple of activities coming up here, one of which is in Richmond, and Frank is going to discuss it right now.
The UVA Club of Richmond has their membership kickoff coming up on October the 2nd. I think that's a Thursday, isn't it, Hobo?
It is.
And it's going to be at the American Tap House in Willow Lawn. Just go to richmondwhos.org or the UVA Club of Richmond. Type that into your search bar, and you can go register for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And Barry Parkhill is the guest speaker, Hobo.
Yeah.
Pretty certain you'll be there.
I will be there. You know, I mean, I did carry the man for 4 years. It got a little, got a little heavy after a while, but...
That's one way to look at it. Also, on the very next day, Friday, October the 3rd, the Tee It Up Golf Tournament up in Charlottesville at Birdwood Golf Course will be held. The Tee It Up event raises money for the men's and women's golf tournaments, and I understand they still have room for a couple of foursomes. It's not an expensive event, and you have a chance to meet Steve Marino, a PGA golfer, Kyle Stauff, Brittany Altomeyer, and a bunch of other UVA golfers. And you'll meet players from the men's and women's teams, as well as the head UVA men's coach, Bowen Sargent, who's a great guy and has been a guest on Who's Talking.
And the October 3rd is on the eve of the Pitt game, which starts at?
7:30. It was just announced today. UVA will play Pitt under the lights Saturday night, 7:30. And
this coming Saturday, the Golden Flashes will kick that one off at what time?
3:30 in Scott Stadium. And for goodness sakes, folks, stop coming up with excuses. Go see a good football team, and that would be the University of Virginia.
They are good, and no weather excuses this weekend. I think it's supposed to be a beautiful day.
It's not going to be too hot. It's not going to be too cold.
Goldilocks weather. I love that.
In fact, it's perfect for Hobo, who hates to sweat while he's tailgating.
I know. You know, that's why I played an indoor sport.
All right, so let's get on to the LeClaire Ryan play of the game. And as it is our favorite moment in time, we get to say we even have an attorney from LeClaire Ryan here to do the play of the game.
Well, UVA went for it on fourth down at the Brigham Young 41. The Hoos only needed a few inches, but Grayson Lambert's sneak off left guard seemed to get the distance, but the referees didn't blow the whistle. Defensive tackle stole the ball away from him. And Lambert was eventually knocked back without the ball. Refs talked about it for a while and determined that his forward progress hadn't stopped when the ball was taken away and turned the ball over to Brigham Young. Unfortunately, that wasn't a reviewable call because their ruling was that his forward progress hadn't stopped, and BYU got the ball, and even though all turnovers were reviewed, that was a big momentum killer in Brigham Young territory for us.
That about, sounded like a rather legalistic explanation.
He really did. I think he overthought that thing. but I liked his interpretation. I would just add that to me was about as blatant as it gets. When the Zebras have to huddle and one official has to argue the way that one official was arguing with the others, he persuaded them to say, well, just because we didn't blow the whistle didn't mean the play wasn't dead. The scrum had stopped moving. He had gotten his first down by a yard or so. And how many times have you seen the ball roll around and go all over the place after something like that? My goodness, what it does is it gives the defense an unfair advantage in those fourth and inches plays. And I promise you, you will not see one any more controversial than that one. That was bogus. In fact, my grandfather used to say that was funny business going on down there by those Zebras.
Well, it was clearly a tough call and a bad break for the Hoos. And as I told you earlier, Frank, I was headed to babysit my grandkids at the time, had the Virginia radio broadcast on in the car, and the radio crew had called it a first down for Virginia. And, you know, like 10 or 15 seconds later, they were shocked by the developments that all of a sudden it was being called a fumble and Brigham Young football. So clearly a tough moment in the football game for the Hoos.
Well, Tony Covington, the UVA color analyst, he was ready to...
He was colorful about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he wanted to put on his pads and go after those referees right then and there. All right, let's get on with the show here. We are delighted to have Vern Inge with us tonight. Vern, let's tackle this issue about, you know, the biggest schools in college sports in the five largest conferences. They are the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and the SEC. They include 65 schools or universities. And now there's a new weighted voting system in place. that's going to have an impact on 350 schools. And it really comes down to how millions of dollars in money is going to be spent. And tell us what your thoughts are on this whole business of autonomy.
Well, it's going to be a pretty fascinating development, see how this all comes about. It clearly appears to be happening. There is technically a 60-day period where the NCAA could reverse course, a study period, they call it. But separating the power conferences, and clearly the NCAA has given into their power because there was fear that those conferences are going to split off and start their own NCAA, which may or may not have been a good thing for football and college sports, but certainly wouldn't have been a good thing for the NCAA because that's where almost all their money comes from. And so ultimately this vote was taken to say that these five power conferences get to decide some things and initiate legislation, and they can decide things that would impact on how student athletes are, let's face it, compensated for playing the games for those conferences, and then other conferences can decide whether or not they're going to follow those rules.
Vern, you may know that. Does it just apply to football and basketball, or is it different, just the revenue sports?
Right now, it just applies to the revenue sports, although we expect that if this starts to develop and build over time, it certainly should apply to other games. And right now, it's only men's basketball and football.
And the other, it leads to other questions. Where's the money going to come from?
Well, the universities need to come up with the money, not a problem for the power conferences in most cases, except for they need to be mindful of Title IX. The Title IX issues will be substantial because most universities now have more women students than male students, which means that you need to have more female athletic spots than male athletic spots because they have to be in proportion, and the dollars need to be spent proportionately. And so football always creates a problem there. And now if you're going to be compensating, and it probably will be amounts of no more than $5,000 most likely, but those amounts per athlete can really add up.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, NCAA notwithstanding, would you expect this to potentially be challenged in court?
I don't expect it'll be challenged immediately. For the athletes, and those are the folks that lately have been filing the lawsuits attacking the NCAA on antitrust grounds, the athletes, this is a win. It's a minor win, but it's a step in the right direction.
From a Title IX standpoint, would there be any court challenges in that regard?
Absolutely. There will be a challenge if universities aren't careful in their spending. Now, of course, they have compliance officers that really watch this stuff. But absolutely, it is something that's going to be very difficult for the universities, and they'll need to make sure they stay on point, because if they miss with the dollars, then they will get sued by the female athletes or coaches.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This all really has come about primarily based upon what one of the university presidents identified as the number one priority heading into October, basically is expanding scholarships to cover up to the full cost of attendance for the student athletes. Legislation to give athletes an additional $2,000 to cover college expenses was approved back in October 2011, but was overridden later after complaints from smaller schools citing, I'm sure, budget restraint.
That's correct.
And fear that they couldn't keep up. The bottom line is, and this is very interesting to me, the Wake Forest president, think about Little Wake Forest, one of the smallest schools of the 65 involved here.
Probably are the smallest.
Right. His quote was, "It does provide degrees of autonomy for the five high-resource conferences." And it's almost like he just put on his, "I want to pump you up, you know, jersey," right? And is basically telling the rest of the NCAA schools, of the 350 I cited earlier, listen, we're the big boys, and we're going to make this decision. And it's evident from the quotes from the NCAA president, Mark Emmert, that overruling this would be a rare situation. So he's
I think you make a good point, though. I mean, there's a big difference in the budget of Wake Forest and the University of Texas. And it becomes a question, how does Wake Forest compete? He may not be complaining, my question is, how does Wake Forest compete in that situation? I mean, if a kid's coming out and they get an extra $2,000 or $5,000 or whatever it is, it's almost going to be obligatory that every school offer the full $5,000, or how are you going to recruit that kid?
Hold on, Jim. It's not Wake Forest. It's not Duke. It's not Virginia. It's really, to be honest with you, it's schools like Buffalo.
Or Kent State.
Or Kent State.
They're the ones, that's right, because they can't, most likely the vote will be they won't be able to pay that money. And coming up with $2,000 or $5,000 for a football player probably is a good investment for a school like Wake Forest. But they now the schools, which probably can compete, like Kent State, for athletes with a Wake Forest, will have a tough time.
It's going to be a huge challenge. The bottom line is budgeting is going to change forever. This is going to have a giant ripple effect, and I don't think anyone knows where this is ultimately going to lead. But the fact of the matter is it is happening, and it has happened, and it's going to continue to happen.
Well, they're trying to deal with the problem, and as often happens, the solution is worse than the disease. You know, in my mind, and I played a long time ago, but back in the day, you got a summer job. If you needed a couple extra bucks,
go get a
summer job, and people, boosters and others, just really came up with fraud and everything else. They were paying people for doing nothing, and it became a problem.
Well, they took advantage. Hold on,
right.
They took advantage of that window of the student athlete going to get the job, and now there are all kinds of rules now.
But I think you can police
very
that.
Difficult.
Well, you can. Absolutely, you can, but it's hard. There are not enough investigators for the NCAA to go around. I mean, remember years ago, Alabama got busted for their football players selling their textbooks back to the school for $400 a book. Do you remember that? And, you know, they were already getting the books for free. So they were making $400 gross net off those books.
Yeah, the flip side of the coin is the people that were really monitoring the North Carolina academic fraud were the NC State fans. So sometimes your best police are the fans of the other schools.
That's right. But those jobs are tough. They were very tough to monitor. And so it led to broad legislation that basically keeps student-athletes on scholarship from getting a job now, which is, you know, kind of a silly result.
Well, they find jobs. The problem is there's no cush jobs anymore for those college kids. I mean, they're working hard. All right.
Right.
The other NCAA ruling, which we think is very newsworthy, back earlier this summer, a federal judge ruled that the NCAA's rules prohibiting athletes from being paid for use of their names, images, and likeness violate antitrust law because they unreasonably restrain trade. The ruling in the 5-year case of Ed O'Bannon, who was a basketball player at UCLA, lawsuit allows for trust funds to be established for athletes to share in licensing revenue. It was a 99-page opinion from U.S. District Judge Claudia Wilken.
I'm sure it's fascinating reading. We all ought to spend a lot of time on that, right?
Well, I think we should get our fine-tooth comb out and let's go through every line. But let's face it, what is the impact of this going to be? Because we know appeals are coming most likely, and that'll happen next summer. But they have to start building up these trust funds and setting aside these monies now, don't they?
That's correct. The injunction that was entered is not stayed pending appeal. So the schools need to deal with this right away, and regardless of what happens on appeal, they're going to have to deal with it. Antitrust cases are often overturned on appeal because a lot of the complex legal issues can be dealt with pretty well in appeal. It's different than jury trials where a lot of facts have to be decided. But this one, they've got to live with, and it's quite frankly a reasonable progression. I mean, this was a case, and I think most of us are familiar with the video games, but Ed O'Bannon, who was a great left-handed power forward for UCLA, won a national championship, started or saw the game, whether he was playing it.
Wait, was this a silhouette?
Well,
left-handed shooter.
How do we know
that wasn't Hobo?
Could be. Jeffrey was wearing a light blue uniform.
Oh,
and
okay,
playing
right.
For,
yeah.
and actually,
and it was a video game. It's a video game. They did not have video games when you played Hobo.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, it's a good try though, Hobo.
And I'm just trying to get a piece of the action.
And it had a 31 jersey. So,
you were 33, I believe.
That is true.
If they could get the some old UVA squads on there, you might get your cut.
I think that's
what the ruling says.
What's the ultimate summary in your opinion?
Well, so what happened is the players rightfully said we have some interest in these rights. Maybe we don't get paid while we're in college, but if, as in O'Bannon's case, years later I'm showing up in a video game, why don't I get paid for that? The NCAA said no. When you signed your agreements to take your scholarship or to come play college basketball, you gave us those rights. and we get to get all the money from it. And that it's an antitrust violation because they have a monopoly. They control the spots on college basketball teams. And the court looked at it in an antitrust context and just determined that's not right. There's no justification for that. And the players are entitled to be paid. And the way to protect the NCAA and amateurism is put it in trust for them until they graduate.
Well, we're going to stay on top of this development. And I'm pretty certain this will get hot and heavy after January 1. So maybe we can bring you back and talk about the appeals that will be coming down the pike. All right, we're going to jump to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Olympic Sports Report. We're also going to break down next week's games. And obviously the Wahoos hosting Kent State next Saturday, 3:30 kickoff in Stott Stadium. Huge game for the Wahoos. Stay with us. This is Who's Talking.